Welcome to the Film Money Review Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording on Friday, May 25th, and it is 7:39. Well, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But before we look into that, let's have a look at what's happened in the markets in the year to date. And there has been quite a lot of action. I suppose the main news item that you've had was that existing home sales in the US were at their lowest level in 4 years. So housing market continuing to slow down in the USA, but this isn't having a major knock-on effect for the equity markets right now, and the longer this goes on without there being any major trouble after the subprime fallout, particularly because we haven't seen really major contagion into any of the bigger banks following that, particularly the bankruptcy of companies like New Century. And markets are treating this really with a sanguine approach, and you're seeing the Dow Jones, the S&P remaining in these uptrends. They did come off yesterday rather sharply, but that reaction wasn't any bigger than the one we saw a couple of weeks ago, and there is a possibility that these could move into more of a staircase type uptrend. If we saw further reactions like we saw yesterday, bigger downward dynamics, that would really pour cold water on that theory. But right now, it's that's, I think, the prevailing outlook. Looking at some of the other equity markets, Europe was pretty steady in here today. FTSE was up 5. DAX was up just over 0.5%, up 41. The IBEX was 41. It's around that 15,000 level now. I know that when you had that property news, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, about some Valencia property company, and that really pulled the wind out, or shook the confidence of the Spanish market. But it's right up to 15,000 again. It's going to be interesting to see whether we can hold it up here or move on to new high ground. Otherwise, people will look at this as a key psychological level, and if it falls back from here, people will say, well, if it can't go up, it could probably go down. So probably a good one to look at here. Now, Asia was really quite mixed. The Nikkei was down 1.22%, down 215 points, big gap down, closed off the lows, mind, but that's still a laggard in global markets. And although you've had very positive action in the banks over the last couple of days, and they were quite steady in here today, I apologize for that rumbling outside the window. We're having a Harley rally in town this weekend, and they're starting to congregate, so you may hear a couple of other rumbles, and that isn't thunder. But looking at the Nikkei and Japan in general, I think the best index to look at the moment is the topics, because it's trading in quite a tight range, and it's just moving just top to bottom on that range. Once we see a sustained break above this sort of range over the last 2 or 3 months, that will tell us that there has been greater confidence really coming into this market, and there's no evidence of it really just yet. Now, Hong Kong also sold off really quite aggressively. It was down 278 points, that's 1.34%. Again, a big gap down. But this was an area of prior resistance. It's around the high, and there is a bit of nervousness given that China has gone up so much, and you have Greenspan rattling the markets. And I saw one comment from hedge fund manager today, saying that he was pointing out the blindingly obvious, and everybody knows that China is exhibiting bubble characteristics, but it doesn't show any signs yet that bubble is over. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Hong Kong bounce back over the next couple of days. Looking at some of the other markets, Australia was down 26 points, that's less than 0.5%, and that's coming down a bit slower, and if I remember correctly, that was off the lows as well. You saw a number of other markets in Asia rallying off their lows, having come off earlier in the session. And I don't think there's anything to panic here about at all. Now, look at some of the other markets. When you look at the bond markets, yields are rising, there's no doubt about it. Treasuries are relatively unchanged today, or yesterday, and they're unchanged in here today. Gilts are down 0.25%, and so are the bunds. And the JGBs had a weak day in here today as well. So these are a gathering headwind for equity markets as we see these yields rising. And while they're not at dangerous levels right now, if they continue on their current trend, they will be definitely something that are going to worry equity markets going forward. Looking at some of the industrial commodities, gold is up marginally in here today. Oil is up over a dollar, having been really quite weak yesterday. Copper is up about 1370, and it was down more or less about the same amount yesterday. So seeing some demand coming into this market. While I said yesterday that it would need an upper dynamic, it would need to really hold on to that and probably post some more upside on Monday to put a bit of a floor under this market. Industrial commodities very volatile at the moment. Nickel was as low as 45,200 at the beginning today, but it's up to 46,300 now, so 1290 on the day, and has been as high as 47,000. So quite volatile. Lead is probably the strongest of them right now and has been gathering over the last couple of weeks. Particularly if you look at that lead weekly chart, you'll see that it's been moving up really quite steadily, and it's got a nice progression of rising lows, and it's moving away from this 2000 level, which had held it up for a couple of weeks. If I were to bet on one of the industrial commodities outperforming, I think it would be lead. And it has been quite a while since lead has outperformed. Looking at some of the other commodities, corn down a little bit in here today, soybeans up 7.25, so pulling away from that 800 level, which had been an area of resistance in the past, and I think we can give that one the benefit of the upside. Wheat is also looking quite good, and so is oats. Corn is the laggard in here right now. Coffee down marginally in here today, and white sugar in the UK up 690. That's a new one on me. I hadn't spotted that earlier on today, so I'm pulling up the chart, because white sugar had been consolidating over the last couple of days. Now it's pushing up above that 340 level, and it looks like it's starting to reaffirm this short-term uptrend. And given the fact that sugar has really been very hard hit over the last 3 or 4 months, and indeed over the last year, that's a good upper dynamic today on the US traded sugar. And I think it's what people have been waiting for. Now, of course, it has to maintain it. We saw something very similar to this towards the end of, or the middle of February, I should say. So it has broken the short-term downtrend, but now needs to hold it, and if we were to sustain a move above 950, I think that would pull a lot more confidence back into this market. Above $10, that was a big psychological level, and it's been support in the past. If it breaks above $10, I think people will start to think that we've had an important floor here. Given the fact that this was nearly $20 last year, it's looking quite cheap down here right now. Now, looking at the currency markets, you have had the dollar strengthen over the last couple of weeks, but it's starting to give it up a little bit. The euro is up 22 ticks, it's at 134.51, and the pound is at 198.48. Now, the pound had been down to 197 odd just a couple of days ago, good upper dynamic 2 or 3 days ago, I think, and it's holding up to it really quite well. So I wonder, have we seen the high for this rally in the dollar? And if we have, I think there's a good chance that we could see the euro and the pound move on to make new highs. Now, looking at some of our bigger themes, because this is all, after all, the big picture audio. We look on the Wall Street as being in a secular bear market. Now, you might think, well, that sounds absolutely ridiculous, because the S&P and the Dow Jones are both making new highs, and the Dow theorists are saying, well, you've got the Dow Jones, the transports, and the utilities all making new highs. However, that's not how we define a secular bear market. We look at the secular bear market as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. So how does that fit with these indices making new highs? And I think the key market to contrast this with is how the Japanese bubble burst in the late 80s, because that bubble burst when the central bank went in and tightened monetary policy significantly, and they continued to tighten well after they'd already burst the bubble, and that threw the economy into a tailspin, and it is only just starting to move out of that over the last couple of years. So when we look at how Japan handled its bubble, and you look at how the US has handled the bubble from the NASDAQ, which peaked in the late 90s, early 2000, we can see that there have been two completely separate approaches. The US cut rates aggressively and increased monetary policy, or eased monetary policy aggressively. So that has resulted in a rally in stock markets, and you've seen the Dow and the S&P move to new highs over the last couple of months. But that doesn't alter the fact that dividend yields are starting to rise and PE ratios are contracting. And while they've risen over the last couple of months, and indeed over maybe the last year, this is more of a cyclical move within a secular bear market. Now, we've had a rally over, I think, 4 years and counting, and there's no evidence yet that that's over. But when we eventually see that start to roll over, then those PE ratios will contract even further. But also we have to contrast this with other asset classes, because Wall Street was the leading market for the 90s. And because it was such a massive pool of liquidity, it allowed access to just about anybody who wanted to invest in it. But now, even though we see Wall Street performing well, it's not the leader. And there are a number of other markets which are leading on the upside. Europe has outperformed in dollar terms, but it has also outperformed in euro terms, or in sterling terms. So while Wall Street is very much in an uptrend, and there's no evidence of that peaking out just yet, what we have to be aware of is that as an asset class, Wall Street is actually underperforming other asset classes, be those equities or commodities. So that's what we mean by a secular bear market, and that is how we can reconcile the difference, the apparent differences. Looking at other stock markets, well, the chances are that we're going to see Japan go back to equal its bubble highs well before we ever see the NASDAQ do that, because Japan's secular bear market has just ended, and we are 6 years into a secular bear market for technology stocks. We are absolutely overweight in technology analysts, and we're completely underweight in Japan analysts. This is really, Japan is an area which is completely out of favor at the moment, and looking at the stock market action, there is very good reason for that, because it hasn't done anything. But this is a market which has been consolidating for a year, having done remarkably well in 2005. And as soon as we start to see that starting to outperform, then those companies which have already broken out on the upside and have been leading the market upwards are probably going to be the best bets in equities on how to play that market. We, at the beginning of the year, thought that this would be a year where developed Asian markets would outperform. And while Japan has certainly not done very much to tell us very many favors on that prediction, Singapore and South Korea have actually done very well and continue to do very well. And particularly when you look at that Korean market over the long term, you look at 20 or 30 years, it looks like it's just broken out of a very, very long-term base, and the upside is really quite spectacular. Singapore, I showcased that just a couple of days ago, and the charts there also tell us that there was a very, very long consolidation. It broke out of that, I think, really only last year, and is moving upwards. So while these are expensive right now, they're going to be buys on any significant pullback. And hopefully we're going to get, well, I certainly don't want to say I'm hoping for a medium-term correction, but I hope I'm not going to be on holiday. I hope I'm going to be here when that ends, so that I can get into these markets at cheaper levels. Looking at other markets in the region, our biggest themes for the very long term are supply and elasticity meets rising demand and developing Asia. And these are not mutually exclusive themes, because with the enormous populations of China and India, and the fact that emerging markets do eventually emerge, and we definitely see that process happening in China and India today, with the amount of infrastructure that they need to build, with their burgeoning populations, very young people who will be looking for jobs, looking for houses, and have the ambition and drive of youth. The growth potential for these countries is virtually unlimited. And that requires an enormous amount of, well, an incredible consumption of commodities. When you look at the per capita usage of copper in the Western world compared to that of emerging Asia, or indeed any other emerging economy, there is a massive disparity which will contract over time. Now, we're probably not going to use less of it. That means they're probably going to use more of it. And given the fact that we've ended a 20 odd year bear market in industrial commodities, and indeed most commodities, all you need to do is look at the inflation adjusted charts in the chart library, and you'll see a number of downtrends which have really only just broken. That tells us that the upside potential for commodities in nominal terms is huge, but in inflation-adjusted terms, we're really only just getting started. Now, again, that might be hard to reconcile with the trading action we've seen over the last couple of weeks, because a lot of the industrial resources in particular have been looking like they're ranging, or that they're looking like potential tops. Like copper and nickel has been quite weak as it messes around this 50,000 level. And we know for a fact that within a secular bull market, you can have cyclical bear markets where they can range around, or they can go through medium-term corrections of up to 2 or 3 years. We saw nickel range sideways for 18 months before it moved upwards into this spectacular uptrend that we see right now. And there's no reason to believe that we're not going to see that exact same type of action in other commodities over the next decade, because commodity bull markets last for a very long time. Now, that is intimately tied with the fate of countries like India and China, and the potential there for those countries to grow over the long term is quite spectacular. So, that's looking at the industrial side of things. When you look at the consumption of foods today, people in mainland China eat 1/8, so 12.5% of the amount of meat that people in Hong Kong eat. Now, that's not a difference in culture. You can justify the difference in the amount of meat that we in the West consume relative to what they consume in Asia as a cultural difference or difference in tastes. But when you look at the difference between Hong Kong and China, that's quite incredible. And as living conditions improve, and they are definitely improving in China, so does one's waistline, unfortunately, but so does our ability to pay for and our desire to be able to eat fine foods. And meats come very high on that menu. That means that, given the fact that oil is also in a secular bull market, and the fact that there is an enormous drive to create biofuels, that means that grains are also now in a secular bull market. Higher grain prices feed through to higher meat prices. We posted that email just a couple of days ago that I think it was a potato farmer wasn't able to, or had to source boxes for these potatoes 30% above what he paid for them last year because China had bought all the lumber. That's just a very small example, and an on-the-ground real example of the way that countries like China are soaking up all available commodities to fuel the demand that is growing there. And given that we're really only in the early stages of this bull market, the long-term potential for commodities is spectacular. But it's not going to be linear, and it's going to be a rocky ride, because many of these markets are thin and they're not traded very much. So it'll be a rocky ride, but we are almost guaranteed that in the next decade we're going to see significantly higher prices for the majority of commodities. Now, the energy complex is a little bit different from other commodities because it can't be grown and it can't be recycled. Once you've burned your barrel of oil, it's gone. And given the fact that we have had oil move up to a significant near $80 last year, and it's broadly been consolidating since then, but it's still at $65 today, and it was at nearly 70 only a couple of days ago. These are still significantly high prices, and gasoline prices have pushed upwards. And rising commodity prices do eventually feed through towards inflation. But inflation is not something that is solely can solely be blamed at the feet of rising commodity prices, because central banks have been in more or less inflationary mode for really quite a long time now. Because the central banks have been more afraid of deflation than inflation. When we had the Russian debt default and long-term capital management and Y2K and 9/11, or the burst of the Nasdaq bubble and then 9/11, the answer to deflect the deflation that they had seen envelop the Japanese economy has been to boost liquidity. And when today we have M3 growing at 3 to 4 times what we the rate of GDP growth, that is an enormous amount of liquidity sloshing around the markets. And it's most definitely inflationary. Now, what central banks do is that they manage the perceptions of inflation, and that's why we've seen interest rates rising. But when you've got that amount of liquidity, the price of money may be going up, but the quantity is expanding, which means that it's a fine balancing act as to whether you're actually controlling inflation or not. What you're effectively doing is controlling the perceptions of inflation while actually inflating the economy quite significantly. Now, as we see commodity prices starting to move upwards, and particularly those grain prices and food prices, those are very close to the hearts of Joe investor and Joe voter. When governments see that you've got food price inflation and there's nothing being done about it, you have what you've had in Mexico, where they capped the price of tortillas because the corn prices had risen so much. So it does turn into a political issue. And when inflation turns into a political issue, central banks have to do something about it because it is then in the public arena. But we're not quite at those levels just yet, and because you have had oil prices come down over the last year, you may even see inflationary pressures moderate over the next couple of quarters before they start to pick up again. That may allow central banks to claim a victory, or at least a partial victory over inflation. And we may even see rate cuts at some point this year, although that's certainly not something I'm forecasting. But the important point here is that any diminution in inflationary concerns is going to be a cyclical event, not a secular event, and we have moved into a secular move for towards higher inflation. And of course, this has a massive knock-on effect for the bond market. I would say that long-term charts of yields are something that people should print off and put on their walls, because they're basing. Yields are basing. And once we see yields starting to move out of those bases, that is going to be a big wake-up call for risk premiums, because right now credit spreads are very, very tight. Risk is primed to or priced to perfection. But that will certainly not always be the case. And our risk tolerance today is quite low. Now, government bond yields have not broken out of their base just yet. And while they have appreciated over the last couple of weeks, it's not seen as a problem just yet. However, when we do see government bond yields turn the corner and move into a new uptrend, I've said that they bottomed in 2003, and we've been singing that same song since then, but they haven't quite broken up yet. When they do, that is going to be a significant headwind for equity markets, because you'll have the competition for capital between something that's yielding significantly more than the equity markets versus what you can get in performance from shares. And it will be the beginning, I think, of a readjustment. But that is something that we will see going forward. It is not something that we're seeing today, but it is certainly something to keep in mind. And of course, the other big issue here is the value of currencies. The one hard fundamental in the currency markets are interest rates, or interest rate differentials. And the US has got some of the highest interest rates of the reserve currencies today, which has allowed the dollar to remain relatively firm. But you have the Eurozone raising interest rates, the pound, or the Bank of England is already at a higher rate than the Treasury or the Fed, and slowly but surely you're going to have the Bank of Japan raising interest rates again. That is not something that's happening today, but it is definitely in the pipeline. And given that you have the enormous deficits, the twin deficits in the US, and there are, regardless of what you hear Treasury Secretary saying, that they support a strong dollar, given the fact that there is enormous downward pressure on the dollar, and a weaker dollar is one of the only ways that they've got to bring those deficits under control, we can anticipate that we're going to see a weaker dollar going forward. But the question is just how much weaker, because in the competitive era of globalization, no country wants a strong currency, at least for the long term, while they may tolerate it in the short term. You've got the euro currently at 134.47, and I think the high is near 137. Now, many European countries, and particularly the bigger ones like Germany, are export oriented, so they consolidate their earnings in euros. The higher that euro gets or goes, the lower their earnings are from exports. And the higher it goes, the greater the call is going to be from those manufacturers for the central bank to do something about it. Which means that while you're going to get short-term trends in currencies, you're probably not going to get long-term trends. The one exception to that is going to be some of those Asian currencies, because they're really quite depressed, even since the Asian financial crisis. You also have the really big move that is gradually happening in the Chinese renminbi. They devalued their currency a number of times in the 90s, and they're slowly allowing that to strengthen. That is also allowing other Asian countries to allow their currencies to appreciate. And if you take a look at the Asian dollar index, you'll find that in the currency section of the chart library, and you look there at the 10 or 15 year chart, you'll see that this is an index that has broken out of a base, and it points towards Asian currencies getting stronger over the longer term. And of course, for anyone investing in Asia, buying stock markets which are going upwards and are probably the best performers in the world in a region where currencies are getting stronger, that means you're getting the benefit both ways. And with that thought, I will leave you, but thank you very much for your time and have a great weekend.